Welcome to Stu Does America. We've got a great show coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Jace Medical. I want to tell you all about why it's important to have a Jace case, because no one who looks at our economy for more than a couple of minutes thinks that it's getting any better. Inflation is still high, could still get higher soon, and this has a spiraling effect. You know, people don't want to, they want to be able to pay their expenses. They can't really do that. They're falling further and further behind. Consumer sentiment is at its lowest, level in like the past half a year. Who can blame us as consumers with that sentiment? So what do we do? We have an overrun healthcare system that is going on now. Imagine what it gets if it gets worse. What's going on with the healthcare system, the supply chains to get you the medicines you need? Well, Jace Case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. Just fill out a simple form online and you'll have it in case you need it. There are other options too, like EpiPens and ivermectin if you need that. Jace Medical encourages you to take your family's health into your own hands. And that's really the most important message here, right? Like, you should be the person making these decisions, not somebody else. We've seen that over the past couple of years. That doesn't work out so well. So you take care of your family's health. You be the one responsible for it. You can do that with the help of Jace, jace.com. Enter the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. It's the promo code STU at jace.com, J-A-S-E.com. It's the Jace case from Jace Medical.
STU Does America.
Josh Hammer is going to join us in a few. Talk about Trump's conviction, the latest that's going on with that, what's going on with the Supreme Court, a bunch of stuff. But we're going to kick it off by doing hostages of war. Big development over the weekend where these hostages in Israel were freed. 4 hostages freed. And there was a lot of coverage on it. And, I don't know, you maybe don't know this whole story. Let me get to the basics of it first from an article, the New York Times. What to know about the hostages still in Gaza is the headline of the story. That headline, of course, important because the answer to that is, what do you need to know about them? Well, they're still there. That's what you need to know about them. That's if they're still there, then you need to keep doing things. I mean, they have a bunch of questions in here. How many hostages are still being held in Gaza? They think about 120. Will Israel undertake more rescue operations? They better. How did Hamas respond to this operation? Apparently on social media. So also, I don't care what they say about it. What are the families of the hostages saying? Well, they're saying, thank you. This is great. We're glad they're back. And what is happening with the proposed ceasefire deal? Nothing until all the hostages are back. How about that? Nice and easy. See, much less wordy than this New York Times article. Gaza's health ministry says 274 Palestinians were killed in the Israeli raid that has rescued 4 hostages. Number one tips here, and these are basic tips, okay? When the Gazan health ministry says something, you should not report it. If they say nobody died, you shouldn't say nobody died. If they say 1 billion people died, you shouldn't say 1 billion people died. If they say 274 people died, you can be sure that any other number is correct other than 274. Because the Gazan health ministry is not a reliable source. Yet every time they say something, here we are, 6 months after the last time they started doing this, 6 months later, they're still reporting things that the Gazan health ministry says. It is worthless. Everything they say is without value. Don't put it in your newspaper. Don't put it on your website because it doesn't make any difference what they say. Who knows what happened? Honestly, I would be if 1,000 people in Gaza died or 1 person in Gaza died or no one died and they all got back rubs from the IDF soldiers, all of that is more likely true than the number they actually said. So why put it in your article? Stop reporting what Hamas and their health ministry is telling you. The story, though, is, I thought, fascinating. At least 274 Palestinians, including dozens of children, were killed, and hundreds more were wounded as the Israeli raid that rescued 4 hostages held by Hamas, Gaza's health ministry said Sunday. The killing of so many Palestinians in a raid that Israelis celebrated as a stunning success showed the heavy cost of such operations on top of the already soaring toll of the 8-month war ignited by Hamas's October 7th attack. At least they admitted that for once. That's great. When did this all change exactly? When did it change? Because I remember hostages being freed before, and it, it's shown as like a unquestionable good every other time. And this one, every single time, almost immediately with the coverage, it turned from, hey, they got four hostages out of there, what a miracle, to, hey, they got four hostages, but more people on the other side died, according to the Gazan Health Ministry. When did that start being a thing? Usually we're just happy about the soldiers getting the hostages out of there. We understand that war, and you know, happens, there are casualties, but when did it stop being seen as a huge success? These people are innocent people taken hostage. When they're freed, we just celebrate. That's what happens. Why aren't they getting the same sort of treatment here? Kind of strange. Very strange, actually. That's usually what happens, though. It's usually the path in the past for the media. The mainstream media coverage is kind of making it seem like this is a bad thing. You know, focusing on the people who died, not the people who are rescued. And that's such a strange development. Is that really what the direction we're going in now? Is that, that's how we're going to do this? No, it'd be one thing like, you know, the aid workers who were killed in a mistaken bombing of, you know, it was a month or two ago. That was something that deserved some criticism, got some criticism even from the Israeli government itself. I mean, it said, we made a big mistake here. That makes a lot of sense. If you're not freeing any hostages, you're killing, you know, aid workers, sure, that's something that to be reported on. But to act as if 274 people dying, many of which were members of Hamas, and then acting as if there's some sort of equivalency here, it's just insane. These people were, this is just a pitch to anyone who's out there who happens to be in Hamas. We have a very large Hamas membership audience here on the Studios America program, I'm sure. But if you're in Hamas, one way to avoid all the murder that you're calling from the Israeli soldiers is to not take hostages. What if, I don't know, you didn't steal people from Israel and imprison them and torture them? What if you tried that approach? My guess is your casualty numbers would be a lot lower, maybe zero. You know, we could talk about a ceasefire all day, but if you remember the ceasefire of October 6th, which, by the way, was a ceasefire only really from one side, the Israeli side, still, it was much more of a ceasefire than it is now. If you want a ceasefire from the Israeli soldiers, I don't know, maybe return the hostages immediately, and we'll start talking about it. Incredible. Now, look, war sucks. You try to avoid war because everyone knows war is hell. It's a terrible, terrible thing. No one wants war. You want to avoid it if at all possible. One thing that makes it impossible to avoid is when someone comes across your border and kills, rapes, and murders thousands of your people. Kind of hard to avoid war at that point. But like, when you are in the middle of a war and you're trying to free hostages, very rarely do I remember a lot of criticism about the sort of casualties that come as far as damages outside of the targets. These things happen. I mean, go back to World War II. We're sitting here trying to free people out of concentration camps. As we're going through that process, lots of innocent Germans died. Okay, lots of Germans who didn't like Hitler died. Lots of Germans who had nothing to do with the concentration camps died in that process. This is why you try to avoid war at the beginning. A lot of people pay for crimes committed by their government when they had nothing to do with them. That's a terrible outcome. I mean, you know, it's a lot different in some ways because, you know, Hitler never enjoyed 90% support like Hamas does in some of these polls. So it is a different situation. But the bottom line is, don't take hostages and then hide them in hospitals and people's homes if you don't want there to be a lot of people around those hostages dying. That is just going to be an outcome of something like this. It's not a positive one. You don't necessarily wish that this is the outcome, but you do, of course, wish that these hostages are actually freed. Now, Biden said a couple of things. He said Biden celebrates the Israel's rescue of four hostages, vowing we won't stop. He celebrated the successful rescue of four hostages from Gaza, vowing that the U.S. won't stop until all the hostages are returned. Biden and French President Emmanuel Macron praised the operation during their joint international press conference on Saturday in Paris. Both leaders touted the cooperation between the U.S. and France, along with ensuring that both Western countries will continue to support Ukraine as the country feds off. I mean, you can't get their one conversation with Biden without him bringing up Ukraine, huh? Even if it's completely unrelated. Now, the Biden administration has discussed potentially negotiating a unilateral deal with Hamas to free U.S. hostages. You might remember the phrase, we don't negotiate with terrorists. That had an expiration date on it. So that is, it's like milk. It's no longer good. We no longer believe that. Biden administration officials have discussed potentially negotiating a unilateral deal with Hamas to secure the release of five Americans being held in hostage in Gaza if current ceasefire talks involving Israel fail, according to two current senior U.S. officials and two former senior U.S. officials. Such negotiations would not include Israel and would not be conducted through Qatari current tasks have been, said the officials. I will say this. It's a very strange direction to go in. I mean, it seems like the top priority of this country is to get our hostages out of the situation. And it just seems like there was a time when America would just do this, right? We wouldn't beg Hamas's permission to do it. We would just do it. I don't know when that died. Apparently that expired as well, like the milk. But like, aren't we in the United States of America here? Like, we're really going to let Gazans hold our people? And it's not even a top priority. Our big thing is behind the scenes, we're going to ask Hamas permission. It's just completely insane. Now, of course, the Democrats are reacting as you'd expect them to react. Momentum growing behind a Democratic boycott of a Netanyahu speech. He's supposed to come here and talk. And people like Bernie Sanders are like, I'm not going. Which has anyone ever been disappointed that Bernie Sanders doesn't come to your event or your party? Is anyone like, oh, gosh, this would be a great gig, except for, of course, that Bernie Sanders isn't here. No one wants you, Bernie. OK, that's a little separate. UN Food Agency is pausing its aid work at a U.S. pier in Gaza over security concerns. Another fascinating development, this pier, which they built for $300 million of your money. I remind you that you will pay taxes for your entire life and never pay for even a sliver of this pier that they put up and that broke almost immediately. Now, when aid does get across the pier somehow, across the broken pier to the actual shores, the UN's not going to pick it up anymore because, of course, it's a catastrophe area where that was. But that wasn't really even the worst response. Amazing. I mean, you want to talk about just completely disconnected from reality. Let me give you this guy, Omar Badar. Somehow he got booked on CNN as a guest, and here's what he had to say.
Just imagine the reverse scenario.
Yeah.
Right now, as we speak, there are thousands of Palestinians who have been kidnapped out of Gaza, placed in Israeli detention without any charge or trial. There's an article in the New York Times outlining the absolute horrific abuse they are undergoing on a daily basis. And if Hamas today were to carry out an incursion into Gaza, kill a couple of hundred Israelis, and then retrieve four Palestinians,
what a weird scenario.
Would anyone in our discourse be celebrating this as some kind of victory?
Yes,
would anyone even know the names of the four Palestinians who had been rescued from Israeli detention? Mm-hmm. Just, we know the answer to that.
Yeah, we
and
do.
That's because we currently have a moment in which it's incredibly upsetting, the fact that we don't see Palestinian lives as equal or as deserving of the same kind of concern.
Hmm.
And we carry on just accepting this mantra of Palestinians as collateral damage and a necessity and continuing to treat the Israeli government as some kind of protagonist in this story,
what
even though they are ultimately responsible
are you
for
watching?
The situation in which we find ourselves.
I mean, like, what networks are you watching? Have you watched any of the actual coverage of this? Israel's not being touted as the heroes. No, like, no countries on earth are standing with them, including us half the time. I mean, this is incredible. Now, Crystal Ball saw this and decided to respond to it. Omar makes such a key point. If Hamas committed a bloody massacre of Israelis to rescue four Palestinians, it would be universally condemned. But Palestinian lives are considered so worthless by U.S. officials that they believe this bloodbath is not only acceptable, but worthy of celebration. Of course, the U.S. played a pivotal role in the operation, so the blood is directly on our hands. Two, this is breaking news to everybody on the left. Hamas did commit a bloody massacre of Israelis. They didn't rescue any of their own civilians in it. They just did it for fun. Did it, you know, for what, sexual gratification in many cases. But they did do it. That's actually how all this started, you know. You can go back as far as you want, but at least this most recent inflammation of this area started when Hamas did the exact thing you're acting like they didn't do. And by the way, While it was condemned for like a week, maybe, ever since then, it's been nonstop coverage about how bad Israel is. Every headline about hostages being saved included how mean Israelis were. I mean, what is the price? If your son or daughter were a hostage, God forbid, in another country, what is the amount of Hamas life you'd be willing to trade for it? I guess the number is pretty friggin' high. If you're going to come and do these things, and by the way, it's hard because there are Palestinians that had nothing to do with this. But when you see the polling of this area, it's really hard to find them. It's hard to find people who don't viscerally support what happened on October 7th. 60, 70, 80, 90% support, depending on the question you're asking. So while they might not have actually gone and done the crimes themselves, many of them are hiding. Many of them are cheering Hamas on throughout this process. Now, the Secret Service getting confronted by pro-Palestinian protesters in front of the White House. Kill yourself was a wonderful chant. This keeps going on and on and on. This is how the left has reacted to this. Look, if you want a ceasefire, I would say like the one from October 6th, but it's not really accurate because Hamas was still firing its rockets. But if you want to go back to, let's say, an October 6th sort of standoff where Hamas gets to, without question, just bomb and fire missiles at Israeli citizens, if you want to go back to that calm, number one step, release all the hostages immediately. That's how you start that process. I mean, what happened to the way we used to treat these incidents? I mean, go back to watch the Marcus Luttrell movie, which, of course, is a story about his life. There's been a million examples of this. Give a generalized theme. Someone gets taken hostage by the enemy. We make movies cheering them on when they go in and kill the bad guys to get the hostages out. That's how we do that. We celebrate the people who go and kill the enemy. Yeah, this is 101 of American patriotism. When Americans are at risk, we, no man left behind, we go in there and get them, even if sometimes it causes deaths of other soldiers. Those soldiers want to participate in those actions. And I bet you that if you gave them their choice, they'd be in Gaza right now finishing this situation off. It's not only something that we cheer on, it's something that's your responsibility as a nation. If you have captives that are being held in another land, you get in there immediately and you do everything you can to free those captives. The people who had their hostages taken are not the bad guys here. This is like really basic stuff you should be able to handle. You know, and yes, there is a lot of bloodshed here. And no one wants bloodshed of innocents. You do want it of Hamas members, frankly, but you don't want it of innocence. I will say, though, part of the way you deter future rape, kidnapping, murder campaigns is to send a message that all hell will rain down on your community if you do this. This is the exact message Israel must be sending in these situations. Yes, they've done it with precision as much as they have been able to. But at the end of the day, whatever community elected Hamas and whatever community is still supporting Hamas at ridiculously high levels, those communities need to learn that if you do those two things, as well as cheer them on as they go on and murder innocent civilians, you're going to pay for it. You're going to pay for it with an extreme price tag. That is not something, that is not a bug of this particular situation. It's a feature. You have to send that message so it doesn't happen again. And number one, stepping up and giving these hostages back. Number two, denouncing Hamas and getting them out of your community, handing them over to the Israelis. There's step one and two if you don't want this crap to happen again. It's amazing. I'm going to do this a little bit with Josh Hammer and so much more coming up here in just a second. All right, you think our country has a reliable power grid, but we don't. It wasn't built to last. It's ancient and it's faulty. When the next outage strikes, plug in the Grid Doctor 300 from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply has helped millions of Americans prepare for emergencies, and power loss can be an emergency, especially if it's not like just a little short time. you know, we have a failing grid. That means more failing power failures are coming. And we've seen the signs of this over the past few years. Get the Grid Doctor 300 right now at the website preparewithstew.com. This generator lasts longer, it runs stronger than others, and all you have to do is connect two solar panels at once. You can harness up to 200 watts of charging power from the sun. You can use it while it charges as well, which is nice. It charges fast. Multiple ports mean no device is left behind. You can run your phones, you can, you know, fans to cool you down, CPAP machines, mini refrigerators. Take $50 off your Grid Doctor 300 at preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com includes fast, free shipping. Preparewithstew.com. Check it out now. It is the Grid Doctor 300 from My Patriot Supply. I want to bring in Josh Hammer. He's the senior editor-at-large for Newsweek. He's also the host of the Josh Hammer Show and America on Trial. Be sure to subscribe to those wherever you get your podcasts. Josh, thanks for coming back on the program, man. Appreciate it.
Stu, it's always a pleasure. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I am doing well, although I have to say the weekend provided some fascinating media coverage. I don't know that I've ever seen the freeing of hostages ever pitched with such disdain for the country freeing them.
Yeah, I think that that is an accurate way of describing the situation here. And, you know, what went down over the weekend in Gaza, it's heroic. I mean, it's an extraordinarily daring rescue operation. Apparently the IDF and Mossad both relied partially on American and British intelligence, which is a very encouraging sign, if true, and kind of speaks volumes about the strength and durability of U.S.-Israel relations behind closed doors, while simultaneously our politicians from the left side of the aisle are talking a lot of stupid stuff just to appease their left flank. But yeah, the media reaction was completely apoplectic. I mean, they were doing what the media does best, which is parrot out Hamas propagandist numbers. I mean, I can't believe, Stu, here we are. Hamas took over in the Gaza Strip in 2007 after they won a bloody civil war against Fatah, which is allegedly the more moderate Palestinian party. They're not particularly moderate. So it's been 17 years now, and they are still trotting out Gaza Health Ministry numbers as if it is authentic. You know, just a few weeks ago, it was in May, the United Nations had to drastically lower their own casualty estimates of from the conflict because they did an independent assessment and found that the Gaza Health Ministry numbers were shockingly not particularly accurate. So it's really just ludicrous. I mean, I see people on Twitter saying 274 dead Palestinian Arabs. How do we know? How do we know? And furthermore, people are saying that they were all civilians. Well, I'm sorry, but civilians don't take innocent people hostage in their own homes. You at that point, you are no longer a civilian. You are a wartime combatant. So a lot of misinformation out there. But let's not lose sight of the main story here, which is this heroic rescue operation, which is a tremendous boost to the Israeli people's national and individual, of course, morale at a time when morale has really been hurting over there, I think.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I'm just mesmerized by the fact that these Gaza Health Ministry numbers even get reported. I mean, the only thing we know that is true is that it wasn't 274, maybe 275, maybe 273, but they have no ability to say an accurate number. So we know it could not have been 274. Just completely ridiculous. Josh, I want to move on to something else here. We haven't had you on since the Trump conviction came down. Give me your take on this. What does this mean? We know it was a ridiculous verdict, but what are the ramifications here?
Look, I think that any adjective that you want to use to describe the verdict, Stu, is appropriate. There really is no such thing as a criticism that is too harsh for what went down in Juan Merchan's court in New York City. I mean, Stalinist show trial, kangaroo court, you know, all of these adjectives, all of these words to describe what happened are wholly and completely accurate. You know, we have the first criminal conviction of a former president on a crime that we didn't even know what the actual legal theory of the case was until the jury instructions. You know, you mentioned my legal show, America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Stu, I follow this stuff very closely. I have a daily podcast on this. I'm a lawyer by background. I know the law pretty well. I didn't know what the charges were. No one knew. We knew that it was fraudulent bookkeeping in furtherance of something else, dot, dot, dot. We literally didn't know what that dot, dot, dot consisted of until the jury instructions. Incredible stuff. And a flagrant Sixth Amendment violation, by the way, the fact that the accused didn't actually know the nature of the crimes with which he was accused. But we are in the uncharted part of uncharted waters at this point. I hear a lot of people saying, you know, we've crossed the Rubicon. You know, from my perspective, we've crossed you know, hundreds of Rubicons at this point. I mean, was it not a crossing of the Rubicon when the Obama administration prosecuted nuns of the Little Sisters of the Poor for failing to subsidize abortifacients? Was it not a crossing of the Rubicon when the left threw out 5,000 years of civilization and civilizational norms pertaining to innocence until proven guilty during the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearing ordeal in September 2018? Now, obviously, we have the lawfare against Donald Trump. It's absolutely horrific and horrendous stuff. Thankfully, the polling has not budged a lot, which is essentially what I predicted. I thought the two extremes, those who would gravitate to him, those who would gravitate away from him, kind of canceled each other out. That's what the polling basically amounts to. As far as what happens from here, again, politically, I don't think it's going to be a huge deal in the 2024 election. All eyes are on what Donald Trump as commander in chief could do were he to reassume the presidency come January 2025. The media is apoplectic about this idea of so-called revenge prosecutions. Me, I like to think of it as mutually assured destruction, frankly, to use the Cold War era terminology about the U.S. and the Soviet Union.
Yeah, John, you made this point, and I think it's an interesting one because Josh, what I want is a country where this doesn't happen. Like, yep. What I want is a country where people hold the other side with some sort of respect under the law, right? Like that both sides no one is above the law, but this lawfare stuff doesn't happen. And I want to make these arguments, but I have to tell you, it's really hard at this point to come up with them. It's hard to come up with an argument to say to someone on the right, actually, we shouldn't do these things too. Because honestly, at this point, what is the other option? Just continually getting rolled over by a car every 10 minutes?
Yeah, look, I mean, I completely agree with that. Not to toot my own horn, Stu, but I've been kind of saying this for years now, actually. I mean, because from my perspective, they really have been doing this out in the open for a long time now. Now they're even more brazen about it. And by the way, I see some people, even some right of center people, who say, oh, it's just Trump. What are you getting so upset about? No, it's not. It is not just Donald Trump. They're whipping out the FACE Act to prosecute pro-life protesters, trying to sentence them to years and years in prison. They were trying to whip out charges, Merrick Garland, that was against parents rising up against critical race theory in the infamous October 2021 memo. Obviously, what's happening to Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, my friend John Eastman, who's being prosecuted across numerous jurisdictions, a former U.S. Supreme Court clerk, for God's sake, John Eastman, a legal scholar, being prosecuted, disbarred. You name it, they are coming after this. You know, Donald Trump, you know, has a historically hit or miss relationship with the truth, you might say, but he is spot on accurate when he says that they're not actually coming for me. They are coming for you. I'm just in the way. I could not possibly agree with that more. And you mentioned John Yoo, who I've known for years. Now, I was very encouraged to see that John Yoo has been red-pilled, I guess you might say, by everything that's been happening out there in the country. And the fact that John Yoo is moving in this direction. You know, Megyn Kelly on her show the day after the Trump verdict was talking with Alan Dershowitz in this clip that kind of went viral. And she was saying, you know what, at this point, screw it. We need to go full Steve Bannon, by which she kind of meant kind of just get our hands dirty and bloody up some noses. I totally agree. And what that does not mean is we're not going to literally make up charges the way that they do. We're not going to do that. But we do need to bloody up some noses, proverbially speaking, by having some prosecutors file charges in very politically impactful and politically meaningful, politically salient cases. So, you know, maybe, for example, maybe there's a DA, you're in Texas, maybe there's a DA in the Texas Panhandle, a very red part of the state. Maybe there's some young DA who's trying to make some, you know, rise up the ranks of the local party, whatever. Surely he can find some way to find that Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx violated some local criminal statute against his constituents who were harmed from the COVID vaccines, the COVID lockdown, something like that there. That's the kind of creative outside-the-box thinking that I'm thinking of here. Maybe you can do something in an immigration context that would kill two birds with one stone. You kind of get the mutually assured destruction while highlighting an issue that is politically beneficial to the right and detrimental to the left. So there are a few ways to skin a cat, so to speak, there. But ultimately, Stu, my conclusion, which I've said for years now, is that it's going to take some short to medium term escalation in order to get us back to long term stability and sanity.
Yeah, and that's it's a sad place to be. I just don't know. I don't know what the alternative is. I think you're right. You got to be careful. You're not making stuff up. But like when you're talking about there used to be this sort of, I don't know, almost like a gentleman's agreement where like we're not going to go. Like, you know, the lock her up with Hillary Clinton is a good example of it. You could have obviously gone after Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. For a bunch of stuff. Trump didn't even do it, right? Because there was this sort of arrangement. We got about 30 seconds left. Josh, where do we go from here?
Where we go from here, Stu, is we don't give up on the country. I mean, we love the Constitution. I clerk for a federal judge there in Texas. I've given large swaths of my young career so far to the United States Constitution, the rule of law. So we don't give up on it, but we have to be a little more clear-eyed and sober and perhaps flexible about the means that are necessary in the short term to get us back to that end long-term goal, I think.
It's a scary thing, but you outline this all the time on your podcast, which is great. Josh Hammer, senior editor-at-large for Newsweek and host of The Josh Hammer Show and America on Trial. Make sure to subscribe to these. They're great, and you learn so much. You get the whole perspective, and you understand what crazy times we're living in real detail. Josh, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Anytime, you bet.
Well, there are those who lead and there are those who follow. And when you have a real estate situation going on, you don't want the followers. You don't want someone who's kind of like, oh, well, you know, I heard from a friend who's kind of a part-time agent that this is going. You don't want that. You want a leader, but you don't want a leader that doesn't know anything. You can get people who are leading you down the wrong road as well. So what do you do? Well, you need some sort of screening process, right? You need to take the best agents. You can think of it almost like an NFL team. You need the scouts out there, right? Like you're going to these colleges, you're going to high schools, you're trying to find the best athletes. You're trying to get these people through your system so you can understand how to get the best athletes possible to your team. Well, Real Estate Agents I Trust is kind of like a scout, your own scouting department. For real estate agents, if you need to find the best agent in your area, you really only have one choice when it comes to this, because if you just pick the wrong one and you go 0-for-1, well, you've massively screwed up one of your biggest financial transactions. Instead, go to Real Estate Agents I Trust first. There you'll get the best agents in your area. The name kind of says it all, and it's a free service to you anyway, so why not give it a shot? realestateagentsitrust.com. Check it out today, realestateagentsitrust.com. Hunter Biden's lawyers have rested their defense in his trial on federal gun charges. We should have an outcome relatively soon on this. I mean, I don't know. You could get the same situation that we were talking about in the Trump trial, where maybe there's a holdout here. But this is a really clear case. He obviously is guilty of this. Their defenses have really been destroyed here by the prosecution. If there's any justice, and that's a big if these days, but if there's any justice, he will certainly get convicted of this. We will see how that goes. The top Dem strategist, James Carville, is saying that Biden should not have run for re-election. I mean, that's one thing Carville is always good for is, admitting the thing that everyone kind of knows but won't say on the left. He's made a career of doing this over the years, just blurting things out. Hey, wait a minute. I know everyone's saying X, but the truth is obviously Y. And he has done that again recently. He's been in the business forever, but he is correctly pointing out that he should not have run. He said, I thought that Biden should not have run for re-election, but he did. It's him and Trump, and that's where I am, basically. That's how I think most Biden voters are, the sort of defeatist, like, gosh, I wish we could have done better than this, but I don't really like Trump, so all right, fine. I will go with Biden. And it's funny, there's a new poll out that says more than half of Biden supporters say the main reason they're backing Joe Biden is to oppose Trump. And this is obviously a lie because it's 100%. 100% of Biden supporters are doing this. There might be three people out there who are doing it. There's big Biden fans. Now, all of them have the last name Biden. One of them's name is Jill. One of them is named, one of them is the stripper wife of Hunter. Hunter's not supporting him. And then finally, a Commander Biden, I'm pretty sure, is on Biden's side. Outside of that, there's no one who loves Joe Biden. And this was true back in 2020. I think it's even more true now. There's no way to defend the last few years. It's been a catastrophe for the Democrats and the country. And to sit here and act like the real reason you want Joe Biden back in is because you want 4 more years of this is obviously not credible. The real reason they want it is because they don't want Trump. And look, that's their right. They get to sit here and vote on what they don't want instead of voting for what they do want. But at the end of the day, if there was a competitive primary, I don't know, maybe Joe Biden would have lost. I mean, would Joe Biden have lost to Gavin Newsom in a primary? It's possible. It's possible Josh Shapiro could have beaten him or somebody else. I mean, it's just that he was the only option and they closed down the primary really, really early. So there we go. We have that. We have some Trump developments as well. We'll get to those here in a second. big, important topics, ways you govern a society successfully. Think about understanding history, economics, the great works of literature, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution. Did you study this stuff in school? You probably didn't, and even if you did, it was probably a terrible education. Not to mention, even if you had a good education at one point in your life, it'd be nice to have a refresher on these things. Time and technology have changed a lot, but they haven't changed the basic fundamental truths about our world and our place in it. That is why I'm so excited that Hillsdale College is offering more than 40 free online courses in the most important and enduring subjects. You can learn about the works of C.S. Lewis, the stories in the Book of Genesis, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution, the rise and fall of the Roman Republic, or the history of the ancient Christian church with Hillsdale's online courses. These are just great. And, you know, here's the best part. They're all available for free. So I recommend signing up for the Introduction to the Constitution course with Hillsdale College President Dr. Larry Arn. Now, these courses are self-paced. They are easy to start, get into, start wherever you want, finish them when you need to. Check them out today. Go there right now, hillsdale.edu/stew. We complain about colleges all the time. And then if someone really does a good job like this, we should take advantage of this. This is really important stuff. Hillsdale.edu/stew. Hillsdale.edu/stew. Check it out now. It's Hillsdale College. Hillsdale.edu/stew. Now, Nevada has been a really interesting state. This is not a state that would be shocking if Donald Trump won. It's been a purple state. I think he lost it by about 30,000 votes in 2020. So it wouldn't be shocking that he won Nevada. However, his polling has been much better than that. He's up by 5 on the average. He really has, of all the states that he's improved his performance from 2020 in, I would say Nevada is the most surprising and most drastic of these states. He really has polled incredibly well in Nevada for whatever reason over the past few months. And he was there in Vegas to do a rally and was promising to end taxes on tipped wages. He said it would be the first thing he did in office, which is not technically true because he got into office in 2017 and was there for 4 years and did not do this. However, he would also need legislation to do this. Was not part of the tax break plan he did last time, but I will say this. You can be skeptical about that claim. I'm fine with it, honestly. I like the policy. Anytime I can cut taxes, I'm pretty much in on it. That being said, it's a very good political tactic to go to Nevada and say, hey, by the way, all you service workers, no more taxes on your tips if you elect me. Is it going to happen? I don't know, but it is an interesting pitch. What can Trump do about vaccines? I've made this point many times, but the vaccine thing with Donald Trump is one of the most fascinating political developments I can ever remember watching in my entire life. Here's the guy who came out. He was the Operation Warp Speed guy. He's the guy out in front doing the whole vaccine thing. Bragging about it endlessly, like the fawning media attention over it for years and years and years and years. And then, like, in the interim, when Biden was president, people in his base sort of turned on these vaccines. And so now he's still there trying to brag to the New York Times, but also say all these things skeptically. He's trying to draw this middle ground. And what's fascinating about it is he's trying to do this while at the same time going after RFK Jr., because he knows he's vulnerable on this issue to RFK Jr. He said he called RFK Jr. a fake anti-vaxxer. Now, look, as you may know, I am not a fan of RFK Jr., but the one thing he is not fake on is his anti-vaccine views. He is very real on that. In fact, it's been is he really good on the border or Bitcoin? No freaking idea. My guess is no. When you're talking about the anti-vaccine views, I'm pretty sure he's a legitimate anti-vaxxer. I will say the other one that was kind of interesting on Trump was this New York Times kind of fawning profile piece on Doug Burgum, Burgumentum in effect. Will it turn into Burgumania? We don't know yet. But a bizarre, very long profile highlighting Burgum as like the top choice for Trump. Now, of course, Trump can do whatever he wants. It's not necessarily real to believe this. It is real that the campaign is leaking this type of stuff. He's on every short list. The campaign is definitely trying to make you believe he's going to pick Doug Burgum. I don't get it. Like, what is the difference between Doug Burgum and Sarah Palin as a VP pick? Both unproven governors, as far as on their record to on the national stage, but both had good records as governor. I mean, business friendly environments. I mean, what's the you've got a not good looking vice president from a state that you're going to win anyway? Like, what is the pitch here? I don't even understand the pitch. I get that he's got a lot of money, but again, Trump's a billionaire. I can't imagine that's the reason he's making this pick. He's raising plenty of money. I don't know. I mean, maybe he just wants someone who's kind of invisible and someone who's not going to make a big impression. So, and that is consistent with what Trump likes. He likes to be the center of attention, obviously. But look, Doug Burgum, really? Like, that's going to be the pick? It's, to me, very uninspiring. And I don't even know, like, where Pence, at least it was like, okay, we're going to stir up the evangelicals. They're a little skeptical of me, says Donald Trump. With Burgum, like, we're going to, those big businessmen are skeptical of me, like the establishment Republicans. I don't even know what base you're playing to. I tend not to believe this, but we will see if Burgumania is a real thing coming in the next few weeks. Some real shockwaves in Europe over the weekend, these elections that went on, and you know, a lot of the tide sort of turning to the right side of things from the left side of things. I mean, Europe has obviously been leftward leaning for a very long time. And you see that these elections now were, you know, these, they always call them far right parties. They're never just, there's no such thing as a real actual conservative party. They just always say far right. But the far right parties are starting to rise. Some of these parties are, you know, have some good ideas. Some of them are maybe a little bit too extreme in certain ways. But a lot of this is fueled from the opposition to so much of the unfettered immigration that has occurred in Europe over a long period of time. And so these are sort of nationalist parties that are saying, hey, like, we have an identity as a nation. We'd like to maintain it. And over and over again, they're told by, you know, parties that are basically socialists and parties that are in power that they don't really need to be doing this. In fact, it's hateful to be doing this, to recognize your own identity. Maybe no place is this more prominent than in France. And I will say this, I am definitely not an expert on the French political system and how it operates, but I guess that's my point here. I don't get it. Like, so they lost elections. Macron's party did not do well. The right side, Le Pen's party, kind of rose up and got more seats. So the idea was that Macron now has called for new elections coming up in a few weeks. First of all, like, I just am a fan of scheduling the election. Like, it's just, we just know what date it's on, like, years in advance, so everyone can kind of plan for it. This weird thing they do in other countries where, like, the prime minister's like, you know, next Wednesday is going to be an election. So they have an election coming up in like a few weeks, and then another election, a second round the week after, which again, if you're going to, why not just have the two-tiered balloting? I never understand that either. So they have a runoff a week after, and his party, Macron's party, is angry about this. The opposition party is happy about it because they just won. Now they think they're going to win again. And it does seem like Marine Le Pen could potentially be the next prime minister of France, which, I mean, doing the show over the years, you watch France out of this kind of corner of your eye, like you're like, I gotta kind of pay attention to that. But like this has, I mean, the Le Pen legacy, if that winds up as a prime minister, Jean-Claude Le Pen's daughter, that's, I mean, earth-shaking for France. I don't know if it'll happen. We will see. But it is a very tenuous time in Europe right now. And I mean, it's nice to kind of sit back every once in a while and say, hey, like, yeah, our system's screwed up. But at least, like, it's not like Biden's calling for a new election every 2 weeks. I mean, at least we have something going for us. Our system might suck, but at least it sucks less than France.